Hi, this is Jack Spierko. Welcome to today's version of the Survival Podcast. One man's view of the world and the changing world that's coming, dictated on a 50-mile commute to work on any given morning or afternoon. So, today what we're going to talk about is basically starting from zero. I wanted to get this podcast out early in the series. This is probably going to be a pretty long one. Might use up most of my commute to get this one done. What we're going to talk about today is the person that kind of just wakes up to reality that, hey, you know what, something could go wrong at any time. It could be a major national disaster, it could be a global disaster, or it could be just the far more likely regional disaster. We could have a major storm, we could have some kind of a regional illness outbreak. There could be, you know, any one of a number of things that may just leave me stuck at home for a couple weeks because, let's say, maybe a quarantine with an illness that breaks out. Or let's say some kind of storm that shuts down the electrical grid, possibly disrupts the water supply. And maybe it's not, as some survivalists talk about, the end of the world as we know it or anything, but it's maybe a week or two without the conveniences that we've grown accustomed to, and without being able to jump in the car and drive down to 7-Eleven and pick up a Slurpee or drive down to Albertsons for your meal for the evening. And how do you start out when you have nothing? Okay, and the reason I want to do this is I want to start getting people in the right frame of mind about what preparedness is without going overboard, without being excessive, and without, you know, cleaning out the kids' college fund to just simply be prepared for the things that we should all be prepared for anyway. The kind of plan that I'm going to lay out for you today is what everybody should put in place. What I want to caution you on is not like overreacting and trying to do this in 2 days. You've waited this long, you've got away with it, hopefully you can begin a process now, kind of taking your time and getting along with things and getting up to the point at which you're at least reasonably sustainable for a couple weeks to a month, within maybe a month or two, I think is a reasonable goal to set. And it gives you quite a bit of time, and it's not that difficult. I'm going to go through some of the important things that you need to do to get that done. For those of you who are already survival-minded, that are thinking longer term, that are thinking 6 months to a year, it may seem like I'm leaving some things out of this podcast. Don't worry, in future editions, we're going to go deeper and deeper into different aspects of survival planning, of preparedness planning, evacuation planning, and things like that. Today, again, this is really for the people that have done nothing. And if you've done some things and you think this is a good podcast, maybe you recommend this to your friend that is out there that's just kind of like, you know, you're the ant and you've been working hard and storing things up to get prepared. He's the grasshopper that's been out fiddling in the middle of the field and doesn't realize the frost could come any day. All right, so kind of what are your steps? Well, my first step that I suggest anybody take is simply to take stock in what you currently have. And you may want to run the 24, 48, or 72-hour weakness drill, whichever length of time you want. There's another podcast on that. But basically it is you throw your keys in a drawer and you pretend your car is not available to you. You don't use any of the phones or your cell phones or any kind of mobile communication device. You shut the power off to your home, and you don't use any running water other than maybe flush toilets just to make it, you know, kind of a first-time run through a little more bearable. And you spend a day, two, three like that and see what you're really lacking. And journal that, and that's a great way to start. But the other thing is to think about the things that you do have. Kind of look at the way you run your pantry, the way you run your refrigerator, the way you run your freezer. How long would you be able to make it at the lowest point in your current food supply inventory? And what I mean by that is, let's say you're the typical American that goes to the grocery store once a week. You go every Saturday morning, or you go every Sunday afternoon, or whatever it is. You have to look at what would occur if, you know, this emergency, this thing that made you stuck in place without power and or water for, let's say, a week, happened at that lowest point in your personal inventory. So kind of take stock of that running inventory. Where are you at Friday night if you do your grocery shopping on Saturday morning? Because that's the weakest point. That's what you need to address. The next thing you really need to do, and this is really for a lot of you guys out there. Guys are usually the ones that get into this, and a lot of times you don't really think about those that you're going to need to provide for. One of the things that you need to understand, it's very, very important to understand here, is that when something like this happens, it's not just about you. And most guys are good providers, and they think about that, but they don't really think about, okay, you know what, if this is like a six-month major disaster globally, you know what, the kids will eat rice and beans. They'll get hungry, they'll eat rice and beans. And it's true, and they will, and you may end up in a situation that you have to be in like that at some point. That's more of an advanced planning when you're looking at a six-month survival. We're looking at first 1 week, second 2 weeks, and eventually a one-month survival plan with this initial ramp-up. Now, if it's a week, you know, you got to think about those kids and what do they normally eat. And in a stressful situation, you don't need additional stress of trying to make your toddler eat pinto beans that he doesn't like. So think about what foodstuffs and what things, and even what little entertainment doodads and whatnot you could have in place that don't require electricity to keep kids entertained. It's very important. Think about the wife. If you're a woman making this plan, think about the husband as well. It's usually less of an issue. They're generally less picky. They're more driven in these situations than women are. And I don't say that in any way to slight women. It's just that men usually in a family unit feel like it's my responsibility to protect the family. And they're so driven and focused in a crisis that they tend to just deal with whatever they have to deal with. But especially with kids, you need to think about supporting them as well. And as you make plans for your inventory, you know, make sure you're planning enough inventory of food. And when you say I've got 1 week of reserves, make sure it's enough for everybody. I mean, that's important. Also think about, you know, would anybody from your extended family end up at your house if something like this happened? Like, do you have maybe an elderly parent that is not necessarily infirm or anything, can live on his own or her own on a daily basis, or maybe even as a couple they can do very well on their own as long as they have access to everything. But if something really went wrong for a couple weeks, would they move in? And if so, you don't want to turn them away, so you have to think about that as well. One of the best things that you can do, and this is about not only making a survival plan, but getting control of your expenses and reducing the debt in your life, is to start journaling what you buy, what you use, and what you waste. You should have a running journal of everything that you ever purchase, what you did with it after you purchased, how long it sat unused, and what the eventual result of it is. Just doing that, you might have to go back and read it at all. Just doing it will bring to the front of your mind what you really need, what you really go through, what you really use, and what you're wasting. And you might be surprised at some of the things that you've had laying around for a long time in that pantry that really need to kind of either go to Goodwill or something like that, because they're even running out of life expectancy for a survival pantry. The next thing you need to start doing is just get a rough understanding of what your needs are. This is so important because, and part of what I'm doing this whole Starting From Zero podcast for, is that typically what will happen is somebody gets into this alarmist mode, the end of the world is coming, something convinces them that the time is now. Some charismatic speaker, a book, a news article, a series of events, whatever. They think that peak oil's hitting or whatever, or Y2K was a classic example, and then they go out. When they buy like $1,000 worth of military surplus food, a couple hundred pounds of pinto beans, a couple hundred pounds of rice, maybe a diesel generator. I mean, they get ready. They get ready for Armageddon. They go out, maybe they've never owned a gun. They go out and buy a couple guns. They buy stockpiles of ammunition. They go nuts. They do the typical, right-wing wacko paint job to themselves that so many of us get unfairly labeled with. And they have a spouse or a partner or somebody in their life, a father, a mother, a brother, that observes this behavior and tells them, hey, man, you're nuts, right? You're going out of your tree. Because they've made this eccentric entry into survivalism, a year later when all this stuff's laying around, they just, you know, realize it was a mistake. And then, unfortunately, they go completely the other way. They go back to being a grasshopper instead of an ant. So think about this. The ant and the grasshopper story is a great one. And the ant does not, you know, stockpile tons of pinto beans. He brings into his home things that will store well, and he uses them as he's building up a stockpile. So he's actually eating what he's storing as he's storing it. That's the kind of thing we want to do. And with that in mind, the needs that you're going to have in most survival situations are as follow. Water. Water is very, very important. but it's also something that people can go overboard with. If you have 200,000 gallons of water and cisterns in your backyard, you might be really kind of not putting your investment where it needs to go. Food, obviously, is an important one. Sheltering. We're not going to get too deep into this because we're not going to really talk that much about leaving your home in this initial phase of just getting off the ground from zero. But you have to think about, what are you going to do if, you know, the roof comes off the house? Even if there's damage to the home, it may be necessary for you to use what's left of the home. Let's say a tornado hits the house, but it's still got parts standing. You know, what part of your home would be still structurally sound? Do you have, let's say, camping gear and pitch a tent in the backyard? There's all of these things to think about, and shelter's definitely a need. It's not a nice to have. Another need that gets highly overlooked by many in the survivalist field is cash. And I don't suppose it's actually completely a need. Is it, if you don't have it, you'll die without it. But it sure makes life a lot more bearable in many situations. It is a good idea to have stockpiled somewhere some portion of cash money that's reserved for emergency use, and if it's used in any way, is rapidly replaced as soon as humanly possible. And because you may not be able to get to a bank or what have you, or if there's electrical failures and you have to leave your home, the hotel that actually still has a structure to rent, you may not be able to take a credit card. You may not be able to get to the bank. The bank may be closed. The ATM may not work. Having cash is important. And again, most survival situations people end up in, modern history, there hasn't been one where it's been the end of the United States, but it's been the end of somebody's personal world. And those are usually temporary situations. What we're trying to do, again, is get to a temporary time. Okay. Once we kind of get that blueprint in our mind, what are kind of the phases that I suggest you should work through in the basic ramp-up? And by phasing this, you don't get overwhelmed. You'll have a lot less stress, so to speak, as you put this thing together. And you'll be able to manage it from a financial standpoint a lot easier. In fact, you'll be able to very slowly kind of integrate this into a point where it doesn't really seem like it costs you anything to do, because all you're doing is buying a little bit more than you currently use and kind of building it up. So phase one. Phase one to me is when you get in place 1 week of your basic necessities that you need if you ran the weakness drill for 7 days. You shut off all the power of the house, you turned off the phones, you couldn't use the car, whatever, for 7 days, and you could make it through and be in pretty decent shape on the other end of it. And when the power came back on and you went back to the office and everything, the whole world hadn't ended. People weren't sick. People weren't hungry. The kids didn't have this, you know, nightmare experience that's going to impact their lives for the rest of their life period. That is phase one. That's pretty easy to get done. Phase two is where you take those stores and you think about, what if I had to leave? What would I take with me? What would I procure where I'm going? Where would I go? How fast could I get out of here? What is my evacuation plan if something hasn't happened, but it's coming, like a well-predictable storm that you know is going to do massive damage? And what is my evacuation plan if it's an acute attack, something happens right now? You know, I live near the city and a bomb goes off. It damages my home and I got to get out of there. Or there's a tornadic storm that's, you know, not really predicted. There's no time to evacuate. People in the Midwest and Texas and all through Tornado Alley, if we evacuated every time there was a potential tornado, we'd never be home from late March into July. We'd be leaving every week. So it's not reasonable for us to evacuate every time there's a thunderstorm. That's one of our biggest risks in this part of the United States, is a tornado. So two different ways that you'll leave, what you'll take with you, where you go. At this point, it's just really a plan. It's just having the knowledge that you need to get down for phase two. Phase three is, okay, now we've done it for a week, we've figured out how we're going to get out of here. Phase three, though, is how would I handle the situation if I were stuck at home, power out, water out, communications out, can't go anywhere, 2 weeks. So basically, it's just more of the same. It's more food. It's more reserves. It's more planning. It's more making sure you have sources of light and heat if you have times of the year where it's going to be cold in your home. More of, you know, what you can do to boost morale and things like that. And if you get that plan in place for 2 weeks and you have your evacuation plan based on 1 week, if you get caught while you're building this up, if something happens in this time while you're getting yourself into preparedness mode, you'll be able to figure out what to do in 2 weeks if you have to leave. You have some cash reserves, you'll have a plan, you'll know where to go. The biggest reason that people get into bad situations and a disaster is they have no plan whatsoever what to do. As long as you know where you're going, what you're going to do when you get there, why you've chosen that location, and have more than one place to go to in case that location is damaged by the event as well, 99% of the time you'll get through just about any problems. The people that picked up and left New Orleans before the storm hit, in general, they did okay. And that is the key, is understanding that what you do matters. So what you're going to do in phase three is try to ramp up to a two-week survival plan. I can make it at home or in place or wherever I'm going for 2 weeks. And after phase three is complete, where you know, okay, I have enough food here, I have enough water here, I have enough sources of light, electricity, you know, alternative sources for electricity or what have you, extra propane for the grill to be able to cook, be able to boil water, I've got strategic planning of how to get out of here, I can make it 2 weeks, okay, now go for 1 month. When you get to a point where you have a 1 month food reserve, okay, and you have the ability to leave if you need to, and you have enough cash that if you had to leave, you could kind of at least kind of get by and make your situation bearable for that 1 month period, everything in your life changes for the better. Your fear that your boss is going to tell you you're fired tomorrow goes down a lot. Because if you've created that breathing space for yourself in a tragedy that's bad, then something as simple as a job loss becomes very ineffectual to your life. You don't worry, how am I going to put food on the table? Well, for the next 30 days, one way or another, there's food for the table. So that's kind of the plan that we're going to outline today. Now let's kind of get into the actual planning. Let's look at when things go wrong, what do you need first? The most common home emergency is a blackout of electricity. And it's not even really an emergency as long as you're prepared for it. But it's what starts people from being relatively comfortable in their homes to relatively uncomfortable in their homes. The first thing that you generally need in those situations is light, the source of light. So, you know, it might sound obvious, but obviously you should have flashlights in your home. You should have candles in your home. It's probably not a bad idea to have some oil-burning lanterns in your home. They're very efficient. They produce light for a very long time, and they're very, very inexpensive. You can even buy some nice ornamental ones that look nice around the home, right? And they're just really there for decoration. Maybe you hardly ever burn them. But when they're needed, they're ready to go in a simple match or a lighter, and boom, it's off. On that note, you should have lighters and matches in your home. Ability to create flame. Very, very important. If you're not a smoker and you don't typically use a fireplace and you don't typically burn candles, you may have no perceived need on a day-to-day basis. I don't care if you go out and buy a couple dozen cheap big lighters and throw them in a drawer somewhere. Have a way to create flame. That's part of your light inventory. I think everybody should own at least one of those flashlights, and I'd say a couple is a better idea, that you can either crank up or shake and produce power without having batteries. You should have reserved batteries, of course, but that type of lighting system is very inexpensive. They use LEDs. Generally, you can crank something for a minute and get 20 to 30 minutes of light out of it. That's very important. Next thing is medicines. For a lot of people, it's not really, if you're healthy, it doesn't seem like a big issue. But a lot of people are on maintenance medications. If you're on like insulin or high blood pressure or things like that, you should always have a reserve of your maintenance prescriptions. And what I mean by this, you should have at least 30 days supply of any maintenance prescription put away. And when what you're using runs out, you take that 30-day supply out and you replace it with the next 30-day supply. That is a bare minimum, because in these situations, if you happen to run out of something that let's say, keeps your blood pressure lowered, because you have even moderate high blood pressure, now you add yourself into a stressful situation, and you don't have that maintenance medication, it's a recipe for disaster. So it's something that's overlooked, needs to be thought about. Food. Your food will begin to spoil. Everything in your freezer and your refrigerator has a very short life expectancy once the power goes out. So you need to have a plan for what to do with the food that's already in your refrigerator. Many of your meats, if you have a grill, It's going to be a day. A lot of stuff will make it through a day in the freezer, no problem. But as this begins to thaw out and it's no longer cool, you can take your meats and you can cook them. This will make them last, even as long as you keep them dry and kind of in the dark and as cool as possible, last a week instead of a day with spoilage. Some of your vegetables and fruits will begin to spoil. Think about the vegetables, fruits that you keep in your refrigerator. Which ones can survive without storage? Get them out of there immediately so they don't produce gas and destroy the other items in the refrigerator. Keep the refrigerator and freezers closed as much as possible. If you keep in your freezer, let's say a milk jug or two if you have the room, of frozen water, ice that you can use in coolers instead of buying ice to keep things cool, that will help keep the freezer cool longer. We have a deep freezer. I keep about 4 1-gallon milk jugs full of ice in the bottom of that thing. Whenever we need to keep some stuff cool in a cooler, I pull it out. But if the power goes off, those 4 very large blocks of ice will help keep the temperature low a lot longer in our deep freezer than if it wasn't there. The next thing you're going to need to think about is drinking water. Most situations where the power goes off is localized and your water still will flow. It's not always the case. Your water gets to your house because there's pressure behind it. The pressure comes from electricity. Without the electricity to the water facilities, you're not going to get any water. So it's important to have some reserve of water. One of the limitations of water, though, is weight. It's kind of heavy. So you have to think about where you can store water in your home. If you're into a flooding situation, for instance, your water's still good, one of the things you may want to do is go to your bathtubs, plug them up, and make damn sure they're really plugged up, and fill them with water as soon as possible. That'll give you another reserve of water. Believe it or not, the water in your toilet, specifically the water on the back tank, is drinkable water. It comes from the same place, and it doesn't go into the part of the toilet where we do our business. So that's another important thing. So you may not want to flush your toilets. You may want to figure another alternative disposable method for human waste if you got into a situation like that. Not pleasant to think about, but it's a reality. The next thing to really think about is morale. This is especially, there's 2 classic cases. It's a guy trying to take care of his family and thinks we're just going to get through it, and doesn't really think about the emotional drain on the children. You know, having things like a few decks of cards around to play some cards and keep kids' spirits up, or maybe a board game or anything like that that your kids like to do that doesn't require the TV, the video cassette recorder, the DVD player, the iPod, etc. Having some stuff like that helps keep morale up. Having a plan in the first place helps keep morale up. Knowing you're going to get through it together helps keep morale up. So you have to think about, again, like I said, who's going to be there with you. Very, very important. But the other side is the guy that's a loner. Man, I live alone, and thinks that'll be easy for me because I'll just, eat my rice and beans and cruise on. Well, morale gets really bad when you're by yourself. So you have to think about how to occupy your own mind if the other things that you generally have on a day-to-day basis aren't there anymore. So if we go back through that real quick, first thing you can do to be prepared, again, get some of those winding flashlights. Make sure you have a reserve pile of batteries. Get some lanterns, specifically the oil-burning lanterns, and maybe have some candles, and make sure you have a source of flame. A radio is extremely important in an emergency. It's your link to the outside world. They have these radios now that also have cranks on them. You crank the radio up, you get 30 minutes of radio time for about 2 minutes of cranking. Very, very useful. I have one, and what I do with it is when I go out fishing on my boat, I have a little fishing boat, I take it out there with me and I listen to music with it. So again, it's a practical application of a device that's designed for a survival situation. So by using things that I can use every day, that also will sustain me in an emergency, I am not going out and trying to become, some whack job that's got a bunker full of World War II can rations, all right? Entertainment and distractions, very important. Food and water, very important. And having a cooking method. How are you going to cook all this stuff? It's important to think about that. You have a grill? Great. How much charcoal do you keep on hand if it's a charcoal grill? How much lighter fluid do you keep on hand? How much charcoal does it take to boil water? You got to think about that. If you have a gas grill, go buy 2 or 3 extra tanks. Every time one gets empty, refill it. Just having 2 or 3 tanks of propane sitting out in your shed, big, big deal, makes you much more comfortable in a survival situation. So think about that. All right. kind of moving on from there. Let's go through some of the food items that you can begin to store. Classic rice, beans, and grains. These are the things that people go out and buy: a 50-pound bag of rice, 50-pound bag of pinto beans, and a 50-pound bag of red wheat. Maybe they've never eaten or prepared them before in their life, but they go do that. And they think, okay, whatever happens, there's food here. There's a little bit of wisdom there. I mean, because, you know what, 50 pounds of rice, feed a family of four, and at least keep them alive for a very long time. But remember, the first phase is to get where you can be comfortable during a situation that is, you know, typically uncomfortable. And will your kids eat rice and beans? And will they be happy to? Do you even know how to prepare them? It's funny, you know, people will go out and buy a giant bag of rice, and you go, hey, have you ever made rice that wasn't like instant rice or minute rice before? And they're like, no. Do you know how long it takes, how much water it takes, that type of thing, right? That's the other thing about rice, beans, and grains. Just about all of them, require some level of water. So you buy shelled beans that are hard. They store great, but you need water to rehydrate them before you cook them. So it's important to make sure you have water to match your rice, beans, and grains supply. That said, they're a great, great storage option. Maybe you don't need 50-pound sacks. Maybe you start out with, maybe you keep a gallon bucket of each sealed up and in your pantry that you actually use. Eventually end up with maybe, let's say, 2 one-gallon buckets of each, and you use the one in the front when it's empty, you replenish it. That's a good way. And make rice, beans, and grains part of your cooking. It's a great, healthy alternative. It's a very inexpensive way to provide food for your family. And it'll make them accustomed to it should they have to. You know, they won't be like falling back on eating something they don't really like. And learn how to cook with them if you're going to use these storage staples. When you get into long-term storage, not having them is kind of a just not an option. And you might be into a point where you're storing 50 pounds of each or more, depending on your needs and your planning. But initially, that's probably a bad idea, something you're going to regret later when nothing goes wrong and you end up giving it to Goodwill or throwing it away. A great staple to keep in the pantry, it stores very, very long, and you can use on a daily basis, are soups. Soups are nutritious, they're a well-rounded meal. They add, you know, most, you can buy soups with vegetables and meats in different flavors. You create a lot of variety. So a good stockpile of soups in your pantry, and, you know, treat it like a grocery store. Buy your soups, put the older soups in the back, pull what you use on a daily basis from the front, buy a little bit of extra of the varieties that you like, that your family likes, until you have a 1 week reserve supply, a 2 week reserve supply, eventually a 1 month supply. Noodles. I don't really care if I have linguine or spaghetti, elbow macaroni, or penne pasta. I find it all to be pretty much the same stuff. My family actually looks at it as variety, so we keep several different varieties of pasta on hand. Pasta is really a good food source. It can be combined with small amounts of meat or sauce or just some butter and salt. It's very nourishing. It's very easy to prepare. It's actually much faster to prepare than, you know, raw rice, beans, or grains. You can boil water for 10 minutes. You can make most pastas. It's a very, very good staple to keep around. Very good storage life, and most people will use it on a daily basis. So it's, again, a situation where you start to build, you know, buy an extra box of one kind, then buy an extra box of another kind, then buy an extra box of a third kind. Come up with a good storage medium for it and continuously, you know, rotate your stock out. Very easy to build up a couple weeks' supply of pasta along with some soups and things like that. Canned meats and fish. If you're there for more than a couple days, again, that meat's going to go bad in the refrigerator. You're eventually going to have to cook what you have. Having some canned protein is really important. It's less important when you're trying to get ready for 1 week. It's far more important when you're trying to get ready for 2 weeks. A few cans of tuna fish. Most people have no problem using tuna fish on a day-to-day basis. Start to build up a couple extra cans of that. Some of the canned chicken is actually really good, used in preparing different meals. It has very long-term storage. Again, it's something you can, if you get into a point where you're at least using a can here and a can there, you can continuously rotate your stock. Canned beef, I'm a little less of a fan of, but it is something that's out there and available and allows you to you know, make some things that are at least a little more appetizing, a little more nutritious, putting some protein into your system during a tough situation. But just, you know, a lot of people have never even looked at canned meats. So start getting familiar with what's available. You know, when you see something that looks like a good deal and it seems like it'll last a long time, don't buy 10 cans, but buy one. Take it home. Figure out something you can cook with it. If it turns out to be something you can eat maybe once a month or even once every other month, pick up a few cans and continue to build a stockpile behind it as you use it. Canned vegetables. Canned vegetables have a tremendous place in your survival planning. First of all, they're extremely inexpensive, and they're a source of nutritious nutrition. They're not as nutritious as fresh vegetables, everybody knows that, but they do have some very high food value. One of the nice things is they can be combined with rice and beans. Rice is pretty boring. Throw in a can of corn and maybe a little bit of maybe canned chicken, and you have something that's pretty decent to eat. Sprinkle a little cheese on, a little salt, pepper, and even your kids will probably eat it. It's got some sweetness from the corn, so it can be combined with other foods. The big weakness that we have with canned vegetables is it's hard for us to rotate them. We don't generally use canned vegetables very often in our home. We prefer to use fresh vegetables, and in our storage planning for day-to-day use, we use mostly frozen vegetables. Frozen vegetables, you pull them out of the bag, you steam them, and they taste very near to fresh. They don't have that drained appearance and flavor and texture that canned vegetables do. That said, we keep them on hand, and we try to figure out a way to use them here and there. Probably the best canned vegetable that I know of is corn. Corn is one of the few vegetables that when you can it, it doesn't seem to lose its texture, its flavor, and its sweetness. So, you know, find some canned vegetables you can deal with. On the canned thing, too, it's probably a good idea to keep some beans that are in cans. And there's tons of different varieties and things like that. And again, in a survival situation, you don't always have the luxury of soaking your beans, right, like your shelled pinto beans, for 10 hours and then, you know, simmering them long term and things like that. Canned beans, you throw them in a pot, you stick them on a propane side burner of a grill, and in a few minutes they're piping hot. Maybe you throw, early in the situation, you throw some chopped up Oscar Mayer wieners in there, and, you know, the kids will eat that. That's important to think about. Again, always think about the kids. Another staple that people generally have no problem using are things like potatoes, garlic, and onions. Those are great. They store well. You use them often. Just make sure that you come up with good storage methods for potatoes or other root vegetables that generally don't need refrigeration. And as you're using them and you're buying new, you know, you don't want to keep a huge stockpile of potatoes generally unless you're fortunate enough to have like a root cellar or something like that where they're easier to store. But potatoes are a great staple. Full, complete nutrition, good source of carbohydrates, on and on and on. And generally, you can get the kids to eat them. And even with a big, heavy hand masher, a side burner to do some boiling and some salt, you can make mashed potatoes for the kids, if nothing else, and mix a little corn. And again, start thinking how you can combine these things and start thinking how you can use these different supplies on a daily basis. All you're trying to do is just build up a one-month reserve of the things that you would typically use. And here's some things that store very well that you may not use a month's worth every month, right? You may only use a week's worth every month, or maybe even a few days' worth of this stuff every month. As long as you're doing that and replacing it, you won't end up with a pantry full of stuff that's 2 years old. That's the goal, is to get this first month put down in a way where you can just kind of eventually go back to doing what you've always done, and it's just there, and all you're doing is putting stuff at the back of a row and pulling stuff off the front of a row. If you do that, you'll be amazed at the difference it can make in a situation like that, especially if you couple it with some other things like providing yourself a way to cook, providing yourself a way to get heat, providing yourself a way to get light. Again, this is Basics 101. This should be in everybody's home today. And if you're not there, this is where you start. Okay, the next thing to think about, though, is storage and transport. We're not going to go deep into this because, again, I'm going to go with deep planning for your evacuations if you need to in the future. Step one is getting ready to stay home. But in the home, one of the biggest storage implements you can use as you start to go beyond a couple weeks and you lose space in the typical pantry and you want to keep things clean, dry, and safe, 5 gallon buckets. Run by Home Depot, or see if you can get them for free or from food suppliers or whatever, but get some good, sealable, blocking lid, 5 gallon buckets, and once you have too much spaghetti, throw your reserve in there. And then, again, just as you buy new stuff, go out to your bucket, take your stuff out, put it in the pantry, and just create a rotational pattern. The beauty with the buckets is once you have them full, they're very easy to grab if you have to leave and go somewhere where you're not going to just have a readily available supply of food. easy to take with you. Think about water. Think about it a lot when it comes to storage. The big issue with water is it's heavy. It's also necessary to survive and necessary for a lot of your cooking and even necessary to do things like flush your toilets. If your water stops running and you have a swimming pool, you're very blessed because you can take a bucket, go out to your swimming pool, fill up the back tank of your toilet, flush the toilet, and get rid of that stuff. As long as the sewer's not backed up. Hopefully you're not in that situation. Could be. But it's just it's one more thing to think about. So when you start thinking about storage of water, one of the things is, how much water can I store that I can take with me? Because you don't want to leave the home without some water. So having a couple water cans that are very durable and small enough to fit in with all the things you're going to have to pack if you have to leave is important. Durability is a big issue. One time, very early in my preparedness training, I bought this water can. And like I said, I try to buy things I can use on a day-to-day basis. And I was going to go spend a couple days on the beach. So I filled this, this 5-gallon water can with water, and I put it in the back of my pickup truck. And I drove down to the beach, and I got to the beach and the water can was empty because bouncing around in the bed of the truck, the plastic ruptured and all the water leaked out. No big deal, no survival situation, but it taught me, hey, when you buy water cans, buy very durable water cans. And again, that's another advantage of using these things that you're planning for survival in your day-to-day use. You'll learn their weaknesses before you need to depend on them, and you'll find alternatives. Remember, always organize and rotate. Organize and rotate. Organize and rotate. Extremely important. I've gone over it several times during this, but having a knowledge of where everything is, how to get to it, what to do when something goes wrong. Everybody in your home should know. When this goes wrong, here's what you do. You're a little, you know, you're 4 years old. Stay where you are. Mommy or daddy will get a light and come get you. Right? If you're 12 years old, you're part of the action plan. Go here, get a flashlight. If you're in this part of the house, go here, get a flashlight. If you're here, go here. If it's a tornado, this is our safe place in the home. Have an organized plan of what you're going to do and make sure that everybody's aware of their purpose in that planning. And they're aware of your purpose in that plan, so if you're not there, they can go in and take over and do the best job that they can with it. Journal this stuff. Write it down. It will help you form what you're going to do next. Another thing that gets left out, this is my kind of like last little two things to put into your planning, vitamins. If you're in a situation where you're not eating as good as normal and maybe the thing goes longer than you planned, you've gotten prepared for 1 week and it's a 3-week disaster, right? Having just simple, and I'm not going to tell you to go out and buy super high-end vitamins, but simple, absorbable, quality multivitamins, vitamin C, things like that available. You should be taking that stuff anyway, but again, keep a reserve. Try to build up at least a 1-month reserve of those things. Last thoughts. This is on one of my favorite subjects is beer, wines, and liquors. Yes, liquor like vodka, beer like beer, and wine like wine. And I do have a few thoughts on those. One, if you have a drinking problem, maybe you don't keep the stuff in your home. But if you don't, maybe you don't need a true 1-month supply of this stuff. But it may not be a bad idea at all for you to have some extra laying around. Let's say you're in a 1-week scenario where you're cooking on the grill in the backyard and living off your surplus that you've created for yourself. And the lights are going to come back on. Things are going to get better. You know what? Just popping a beer and having it in the backyard while the power's out and looking up at the stars helps that morale. Never anything wrong with it. The other side of it is beer, wine, and liquor have almost indefinite storage lives. They almost never spoil whatsoever. And grain alcohols like vodka, for instance, have preservative properties. They have antiseptic properties, and they're consumable. So they can, if they're used to, let's say, preserve food, the food is still something you can eat. So while dumping some vodka on a wound may prevent infection, but so would isopropyl alcohol. If you had some vegetables that were going to spoil and you maybe put them in a vodka mixture that was going to make them last longer, they may be alcoholic then, but you don't have to go with high levels. It can be used as preservative without ruining whatever you're preserving it with for consumption. So it's just something to think about. And I have a nice little supply of wine, and we've turned blackouts before into actually enjoyable experiences. So again, remember, this is all always about teaching you how to have the life that you really want to have if times get tough or if they don't. And sometimes a well-earned beer, especially having a cold one before the refrigerator gets too warm, will make a bad situation a little bit more bearable. But keep your bearings. Don't over-consume in a crisis situation. But I think most people would be aware of that. But I'll go ahead and say that as my disclaimer. So that's it. That's kind of a getting started 101. Just being able to survive first a week, then 2 weeks, and then a month in your home. Or if you have to leave, knowing where you're going, what you're taking, and why you're going there. And if that place isn't available, what's your destination be? And I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. If you're looking for more advanced concepts and ideas and subject matter, please tell me what you want to hear about. But rest assured, we're going to get more in-depth into how do you survive 6 months, how do you set up what we call a bug-out location, how do you plan for your exact plan for your evacuations and things like that. We're going to cover all of that going forward. Right now, we're going to just leave it with this. And again, remember, we're here to help you live the life you want to live, whether times get tough or they don't.